The Indiana General Assembly's 2012 session raced to a close this week with a flurry of activity that validated the prediction we made right here the first week in January. Although this was technically a short session, it was anything but short on legislative proposals and political drama. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and we'll do our best to make sense of it all with the help of the General Assembly's four caucus leaders on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers. From the State House to your house.
In Indiana's largest city, there is a park where scientists bring ideas to life, where there is a growing community of like-minded innovators backed by the resources of a world-renowned university, the Purdue Research Park, Indianapolis. The idea economy is here.
Time flies when you're having fun, and increasingly it seems, even when you're not. It's hard to believe, perhaps, but the 2012 session was scheduled to wrap up this week. I say scheduled because as we tape this discussion, the final gavel hasn't fallen quite yet. It's already abundantly clear, however, who had fun this session and who didn't. Joining me to offer their take on the past 10 weeks are folks who fall into each of those two categories. House Speaker Brian Bosma, an Indianapolis Republican. House Minority Leader Pat Bauer, a South Bend Democrat. Senate President Pro Tem David Long, a Fort Wayne Republican. And Senate Minority Leader Vi Simpson, an Ellettsville Democrat. And as always, I thank you for being here for the second appearance by all of you. We kicked off the session and the season with you, and now we sort of bring it to a close. You know, you've been working, as I mentioned, for 10 weeks on some very high-stakes issues. These are, in many cases, proposals that, for better or worse, will have a profound effect on people's pocketbooks for maybe generations. And yet, here in the final week of the session, the headlines, the only thing you see, it's all about Peyton Manning being released by the Colts. I mean, does the state have its priorities right, or do the media outlets have their priorities right, or is it all frustrating, Brian Bosma, to here be at the climax of the session only to be sort of pushed aside?
Is the legislature in session? I've been reading the sports page. No, I don't think anyone is worried about that. I mean, it is big news. I've been poring over Peyton Manning's the decision about Peyton Manning, and it's been a topic of discussion. I don't think the folks that are at the State House aren't there so they can be in the headlines. They're there to do the right thing. We may disagree occasionally on what that is, but I don't think anyone is offended if we're not in the front page of the paper. In fact, most of us actually prefer it. It's kind of nice to have a little cover here at the end so we can wrap up our business and move on. I think we're all ready to.
So this has nothing to do with the right to work legislation, the fact he's leaving the state?
No, in fact,
okay.
In
fact, it was meant as a bit of a chuckle, but I noticed
the players rushing to the state all over the place. So actually, on that issue, we are talking to a lot of potential employers here. There's a lot of activity reported by the IEDC and others. I know I've personally met with people from all over the world who are interested in the business-friendly atmosphere here in Indiana, but hopefully we're not here to talk about that one today.
No. Well, let's, you know, four-time MVP quarterback's departure notwithstanding, this was, for you, I mentioned, a fun session for some and not so fun for others. I put you, I would presume, in the first camp. You feel that this was a successful session?
Oh, I think it's been a tremendously successful session. We're going to differ on that, but I think fiscally, I think the state's in great fiscal shape. We're going to fund full-day kindergarten. For the first time in our state's history, I think we're all going to agree that that's major progress. Dealt with a lot of other key issues, additional relief for state fair victims, many other issues of importance, and of course, making Indiana the 23rd right-to-work state in the nation. So it seems like a lot longer than 10 weeks, but I think we're all ready to bring this to a close and move on.
Well, you mentioned there won't be agreement, and I can prove that point right now. Pat Bauer, your assessment of the session?
Well, I wouldn't say it was fun. And I don't think you can judge a session until the ramifications come in. But I think we already have seen that the state's a little less attractive for businesses since we fell out of the top 10 in attraction. When you throw a bomb into a situation when you're doing pretty well, we were, fifth or sixth in the nation in a job attraction site. And I think that's slipping away. And he says, the speaker said people all over the country or world, I think he said, are looking at Indiana. That's exactly what the Republican governor from Virginia said. He said, you're not going to get Chinese plants moving here unless you have right to work for less. And if that's the goal, that's a terrible goal.
Didn't I see, though, the governor said he's received a couple dozen phone calls from companies that are interested in Indiana, ostensibly because of the enactment of this legislation?
There's a word called transparency that we try to keep putting forward. Transparency on the child protection services, transparency on the jobs. He says about the jobs on one hand, and then we see from Brave Media saying that 3,000 jobs that were announced are no longer going to be here. So you need an adding machine on one side in the announcements, but you have to have a reality machine on the other to see what happens. So I think the word's transparency for all the above. Child protection.
Let's get the Senate in here. President Pro Tem.
I was wondering when you get to the Senate. Thanks,
that's
John.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of
Brian Patter all worn out here, you know. We'll let Brian and I have a shot at it. Well, from my perspective, let me tell you what, from Northeast Indiana has been suffering from the loss of manufacturing jobs for a long time, well before the Great Recession. And we have a large group of community leaders who have been working on trying to figure out how to transform the economy up there. The driving force and the statistic that stands out for our area is that in 20 years ago, we were at 103% of the national average wage. Today, we're at 78%. That is a compelling statistic, and it's a real one, and it has nothing to do with anybody's side ginning up the number or anything else. It's real. And for me, the right to work issue is about bringing more and better jobs. This idea that these are going to be all Chinese jobs, I'm sorry, Pat, I know it's a good statement and it sounds good, a good sound bite in the media. Nobody wants that, and that's not what's happened in the rest of the country when you've seen right to work come to some of the states that have recently done it. The fact of the matter is we're after good, better jobs. We want a better, brighter future for all Hoosiers. And in my opinion, this is one of the arrows in the quiver that we now have that we didn't have before. I can tell you that people I know who are leaders in other states that have it have told us that it's going to be a game changer in their eyes for Indiana. They're very sorry we did it. So we'll see what happens. But, Pat, I hope you're dead wrong. I think you will be on this one. I know we all want to make the economy better for all of our people here. I think this will help it. I hope it does.
Of course, now the new law, I should say, has been challenged in federal court in northern Indiana, which I think we can stipulate we predicted would have happened. There would have been a legal challenge. Does that give you pause?
No, there's 22 other states that have had it. It's been in the law since 1947, and this is just a frivolous action. But, you know, people sue for any reason. This is another one. It won't go anywhere.
Ohio's the number one job attraction state in the nation. It doesn't have right to work. It doesn't fit in your
They're trying
equation.
To get it, Pat, believe me.
Well, you're trying everywhere, but that tsunami's over. Yeah. Another election's
time
coming.
Time will tell. Who comes out right on right to work. I believe that the only way right to work works is to drive down wages, because that's the attraction for companies to go to right to work states, is because they can pay their workers less. And so that's a downward spiral, a race to the bottom that we don't want to win. But in any case, let's get back to your question. The question that you asked was about this session and winners and losers. And I would like to think about this session in two different parts. First, the first half of the session was one session. I don't give that one a very good grade. The second half of the session has been better. And I've seen less partisanship and less divisiveness, and more of an opportunity for people to work together. And I think that's important. I think that's what the people want, and that's what we have delivered in a better way during the second half of the session.
The pre-Super Bowl session and the post-Super Bowl session.
Exactly.
And of course, the Republican caucus and the governor made no secret about their desire to see right-to-work legislation enacted before the Super Bowl and before the national spotlight shifted to Indiana. Is that the reason it was so bad in your estimation, the attitudes or the opinions or the rancor within the two chambers, first half versus, once that was out of the way?
I think the right-to-work debate sucked the air out of the entire legislative session, the first half. And there was a lot of rancor and there was a lot of divisiveness, and people felt very strongly, there were very strong passions and emotions about that issue. And time will tell whether it's a plus or a minus. I believe it's going to be a minus for the state and for the workers. But I mean, I hope we're not here to debate right to work again, but instead talk about some of the things that we've done in the second half of the session, some of the things that will really have a lasting impact on Indiana instead of right to work, which is just
fluff. Well, I definitely do want to give each of you an opportunity to identify what you would see as the biggest accomplishment, and I suppose in some cases that may be the enactment of something, or it may be blocking something in other instances. I think, would say, Brian Bosma, that this was the crowning achievement of this session, as far as you're concerned, was right to work?
I think it's the longest-lasting, most positive impact. But again, I'm not looking for an argument on it. We've had the debate. I think the senator's Senator Long's comment was exactly right. That and Senator Simpson's too. Time will tell. But I'm confident, speaking with those from around the world, and they're not in China, Pat. They're in Germany and Italy, and Canada. And in Ohio and Detroit, that are talking about Indiana, and some actual movement here already in announcements. So that's all positive. Time will tell, but I agree with what's been said here that it's done. It's time to move on, and we're resurrecting old arguments.
Germany pays good wages, so they have unions.
I didn't know Ohio was a foreign country, but I think about it.
You have to, I think, have a visa to get under that orange on I-70.
I was rating states, and you were rating states, and the bottom at least attractive state is a right-to-work state, Mississippi. The highest unemployment, Nevada, a right-to-work state. So.
Maybe over in the legislature.
Those have nothing to do with right to work, though. Yeah. I mean, you can grab and say Las Vegas. Oh, all right, right to work. That's a problem. But Nevada's problems don't have to do with the reason that they're a right to work state. No one has said it's a silver bullet, that it is the one thing that it's gonna just absolutely change everything. But in the quiver, as Senator Long said, it can be a game changer, and I think we're going to see it is.
All right, we are going to move on. But can this be turned into a short term gain for you and your caucus? I mean, is this a rallying point as you head into the next round of elections to maybe get union support activated in a way that it hasn't been in recent years?
Well, it's more than union support, it's worker support, because non-union workers realize their wages will go down too, because when you press down, you press everybody down. It has, this and other things have woken up our base, if you will. They were a little lethargic in the last election, and it was a nationalized election. One thing it's done is brought the election back home into local issues. So we thank you for that, at least.
So your prediction is you'll reclaim majority in the House?
We have an excellent chance, because once you talk about local issues, you have a better chance.
All right. Well,
time will tell, as we all say.
Yeah, I guess that's the answer to just about everything today, right?
That's right. That's right.
All right. So Vice Simpson said the session was divided into two parts. We'll do this discussion two parts. Let's move on to what else. To life after right to work debate. There were some other measures certainly that were enacted. Everything from human trafficking was one that the governor had wanted to get done before the Super Bowl was done. Looks as if we'll see new, more stringent requirements for temporary stages, much like the one that collapsed in the tragedy at the state fairgrounds last summer. Maybe additional compensation for the victims of that tragedy. You mentioned, I believe, Brian Bosma, the full day kindergarten funding. So there are some pluses.
What
would you say among those, or something I haven't mentioned? What was
felt the compelling need to deal with the state fair victims. We've done it in a very unusual way, and paid out what the state owed, plus we're putting another $6 million in for the victims. There's no disagreement on that at all, and it's the right thing to do. The inheritance tax elimination, I think, is an important one. I think we have to continue to push the envelope to look to see where Indiana does have a disadvantage versus other states. Very few states have an inheritance tax anymore. We do, and I think for people who are choosing where to retire, I think we're doing a good job of chasing people out of the state with regard to laws like this. So the proposal is to phase it out over 8 to 10 years. We'll see what the final number is. But I think it's important to do it, and I think it will help retain a lot of our seniors, or some of them anyway, that otherwise might be looking at what they may perceive as greener pastures. So making Indiana the best place to live, you know, and work with a family and also retire in should be a goal we all have. And that's one of the reasons we're doing it.
Any concern given the state budget agency numbers we saw this week? Tax revenues for February were down.
I think
$29 million below expectation, second month in a row. I saw Luke Kinley, chairman of Senate Appropriations Committee, say it made him a little bit nervous, a little bit wary.
Well, we are. I mean, full day K, fully funding that, which I agree with, we should do, is, you know, a $92 million price tag. So right there, we're spending some money up front in a non-budget year. But if we do this responsibly and phase it in, as I think is being proposed right now, I think we can handle it. If you did it all at once, it would be a problem. So that's why it's being phased in, and as I said, the number of years is still being debated, but we're close to an answer on it.
Mike Simpson, you wanted to talk about what you perceive to be the big accomplishment?
I think you mentioned some of them. I have a couple others that I'd like to mention, but I would like to make sure people understand that the $80 million for full-day kindergarten is not new dollars for the schools, because what it will do is replace the tuition that parents are paying now. So it's a good thing for parents, but it doesn't give any new money to the schools.
That's true.
One of the issues that I'd hoped we would be willing to deal with this during this legislative session is to replace some of the lost funds, the funds that were cut from K-12 education and perhaps higher education, but we'll have to wait for the budget year to do that. But a couple bills that haven't gotten a lot of attention that I do want to mention that I think will have a lasting impact on Indiana. First of all, Senator Merritt's bill on bath salts, which is the new methamphetamine, and I think that's a really good step forward for Indiana to take. And the other bill is the bill that I worked on with Senator Merritt. We have this new partnership, I guess, and that is it's a lifeline bill that offers immunity to particularly underage drinkers who need to access or should access emergency medical services for one of their friends who happens to get in trouble.
A good Samaritan rule as it relates to alcohol
consumption. And I think over the long haul, both of those bills will save lives. And so I'm really pleased about that. You mentioned the stage equipment inspection bill, which was Senator Tim Lannon from Anderson, and he worked really hard on that bill. And I think some of those smaller bills that didn't get a lot of attention will have a huge impact on Indiana in the future.
And of course, some of the ones that got a lot of attention in comparison are those that ended up not seeing light of day, or if they saw light of day,
prevailed.
They weren't there at the end of the session. Mass transit funding, $1.3 billion proposal that would have dramatically expanded mass transit in the county in which we're sitting right now, in our county to the north, with light rail, with additional bus routes. Would have been funded through a referendum in which voters could have said thumbs up or thumbs down on whether to see an increase in their income tax. Not the year for that, clearly.
Well, it ran into difficulties in the House, did not even have a bill in the Senate on it. So, but I've already met with the advocates for that, and we've kind of done a postmortem on what went well and what didn't, and how they might approach that in the future. And
your prediction is it's back, and maybe
a lot of legislative ideas aren't done in the first year
for that. Part of that was because there's a pledge by many Republicans that they don't want to do any form of taxation, and that required a local taxation. And then there was they revisited the anti-union issue by putting even though right to work had passed, they did an additional safeguard against unions in that bill, and therefore it would have made it a partisan issue.
I've got to respond to that, John. I've been silent on that. I read that bill, and all it said is a person who was employed by the transit authority couldn't be forced to join a union. It was not, quote, right to work. That's exactly the same as federal law. It's stated all over the place in state law, and it had nothing to do with wages or fair share. It was only you can't make a person join a union. And that was a total red herring. It got one Democrat vote in the Ways and Means Committee because of this alleged, quote, right to work language that just wasn't there. That was a complete, it was a ghost.
So by removing that, it would have been very easy to move that on in that
you
case.
Think that was,
there's a bigger problem here than that, though, too. And I know that was a political issue in the House. But reality is, and Pat, you know this as well as I do, being from the northern part of the state, if you want to get something done and affects just your region, you have to have unanimity and cohesiveness with your legislative delegation. And there's that, even among the Republicans and even among the Democrats, that doesn't seem to be the case. This plan had flaws, and when we're looking from outside, looking in, and seeing, you know, Marion County and Hamilton County want this, allegedly, but their own delegation has differences of opinion on it, that's a problem for the rest of us. So it's really going to be important for the leadership in both counties, if they want that, to get their legislators together, sit down and see if they can find common ground.
And you're right.
If they can't.
You're right about that. When we did the stadium bill, we had to have it totally bipartisan because of the tax situation. And also, we put other projects in from other parts of the state.
Exactly right.
And that never got that to that point. So that is a good point.
But I hope mass transit doesn't get put on the back burner, because there are a lot of communities, not just Hamilton County and Marion County, but a lot of communities around around the state which are very interested in mass transit.
Well, and if gas prices meet projections of $5 a gallon, perhaps that will breathe new life into that debate.
When they talked about the successes, you notice they all were emergency type successes, which is what this session's really based upon. And I'm a little worried that we're going to drag it out a little more, because I hear on things like personalized license plate elimination coming on the hemisphere or whatever, and things like the gasification plant, which I thought was resolved 2 years ago, additional money going because of the price of natural gas has gone down and we can't afford the natural gas plant, and I hope that's not going to be something that'll keep us going here longer. I think we have done what we came here to do, those emergencies that everybody else admits to, and we've done the one that we all, half of us are about, less than half, didn't want, and that was the right to work.
Well, and as we wrap up, and unfortunately we just about are out of time, you mentioned lack of cohesive opinion, and certainly on local government reform, this has become the Harold Stassen of legislative proposals. This was going to be the year the Chief Justice, who was part of the Blue Ribbon panel that drafted these proposals, retiring, governor called for a tribute to him by passing these. Brian Bosma, will we ever see more of those measures enacted?
Several were passed. Several are now law.
Some of the nepotism.
Nepotism, yeah. Conflicts, these are ones that have fallen by the wayside in the past because they got loaded up with some of these other issues. And we gave pretty clear instruction to our leaders in this area, concentrate on areas of agreement, and that's exactly what's happened, right. And much of that has passed.
It's called township fatigue. We're tired of talking about township reform. It's really, township government is 1% of the cost of local government in Allen County, where I'm from. It's a flea, it's a gnat, if you want to call it that. It's been built into a mountain. It's not as important as people make it out to be, except for a few large townships where there are issues there, but we just need to move on from that. We'll continue to discuss local government reform, but in a different format, I think.
All right. We'll get back to the Peyton Manning discussion once the cameras are off here. I appreciate you being here. Again, my guests have been House Speaker Brian Bosma, an Indianapolis Republican, House Minority Leader Pat Bauer, a South Bend Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem David Long, a Fort Wayne Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Vi Simpson, an Ellettsville Democrat. The 2012 legislative session is over. On the season finale of Indiana Lawmakers, four State House journalists picked the winners and losers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Well, Ed, during the roundtable, you heard Senator Vi Simpson say that there were two sessions, the before Super Bowl and the after Super Bowl. I would posit that there are maybe three, those two plus the all-important conference committee week, and it seems to me that the legislative sausage grinder, if you will, has been in full bore operation this week. What's your take on it?
Well, there really were three sessions, or are three sessions. You had the tough first half. You had a second half that saw a lot of collegiality. We were very surprised to see that things really changed 180 degrees. And conference has been a little bit different than usual, too. And with the Republicans controlling everything, it's really kind of an intramural set of battles. And what we're also seeing is that there are a lot more big issues that have to be resolved, not threading the needle so much, although there are still a couple of bills like that. We're still dealing with some major conceptual differences, philosophical differences between the House and the Senate on some key bills in that last week. And we usually see a lot more precise kinds of work in conference than we did this session.
And to your point about intramurals, it's not only differences of opinion perhaps between the House and Senate Republican caucuses, but also the governor's office.
With the governor.
You mentioned a couple bills. In fact, dealing with tax credits for the Rockport plan. I mean, there are several things that really are, those are hanging fire as we tape this in the final hours of the session, where it could go either way.
And nobody really knows whether the governor is being backed by people in the House or being backed by people in the Senate on some of these. And the governor has yet to really weigh in on some of the bigger issues that he says that, yes, I'm in favor of something a certain way, but he's not really been all that aggressive in lobbying for them like that smoking ban.
Does he come away with a victory this session? Do Republicans generally come away with a victory? Or is it, as Pat Bauer suggested, this is going to be a rallying point as it relates to right to work for Democrats?
I think that both sides are happy to be able to go to war in November on the issues that they've been presented with this session.
Well, it'll be fun to watch, as always. Ed, thank you for your insight. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And you can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from both Xfinity and Bright House Networks. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis. We're back again next week. Until then, take care.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.